We're a couple of weeks from students returning to school into a new era in education because of the pandemic. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Monroe County schools will start on the 13th. Palm Beach County schools have pushed the start back to the end of the month.
This is going to be a balancing act with a lot of conversation between families and schools on what's in the best interest of children.
One thing all South Florida districts have in common, they're all starting with distance learning. Today on Sundial, we're devoting the entire hour to teachers, understanding remote learning and when students can safely return to campus. We have teachers from all across South Florida joining us to answer those questions, and we'll take your calls. What concerns do you have about the upcoming school year? Call in 800-743-9576 or watch us on Facebook. Just go to WLRN Sundial. All of that coming up today on the program. First, the news. Hello and welcome to Sundial on WLRN. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thanks so much for joining us. School will be starting again across South Florida in just a couple of weeks. As our region remains a hotspot for the coronavirus pandemic, all students in public schools will be learning remotely to start the school year. For teachers, students, and parents, virtual learning presented its challenges at the end of the spring. A national poll conducted by EdWeek last month found nearly 75% of parents believe their children learned less during remote school than when they would have been in a classroom. Will things be better in the fall? We've assembled a panel of teachers from across our four school districts to discuss their preparations, their experiences, and their concerns. Maribel Pizarro teaches history at Palmetto Senior High School in Miami-Dade. Melissa Welch teaches history at Coral Shores High School in Monroe County. Robert DeGennaro teaches fifth grade, all subjects, at Hayden Roan Elementary in Palm Beach County. And Brandon Boswell teaches biology at Cypress Bay High School in Broward County. To all my teachers, I welcome you. Thank you so much for your time today. And just to mention, by the way, that besides this program being on air, of course, is that we are streaming live right now on our Facebook page. Just go to WLRN Sundial. You could post comments and questions there, but also you could call in 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-9576. Maybe you're a teacher. What is your biggest concern for this school year? Maybe you're a parent. What do you want to know about how the school year is going to start, and what can you do to help your child? Since everybody's remote learning to start, what can you do to help them not fall behind? Again, 800-743-9576. The school year is going to start differently for everybody because Monroe County gets their starting first. Palm Beach County pushed their start date back to the end of the month. Everybody's got a different start date, but again, everybody's starting remotely. From each of you, I want just 30 seconds of your biggest concern for your students as we start the school year this way. Robert, let me start with you.
So my biggest concerns are for students who don't have the availability of internet and computers. Palm Beach County is doing a very big computer purchasing, and there's various internet things you can do. Xfinity and whatnot have free programs, but in some cases we have students who all the families are undocumented and nobody wants to be the person on the bill. Right. So that's a concern.
And so basically access.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think probably that's the number one thing that I would worry about for all students.
And Maribel, what about you? What is your biggest concern as we're about to start?
Essentially, access would be the biggest concern, not so much access to materials because the district is providing that, but the support to get the access or the knowledge to have that access that is available to them. I think it's problematic for a lot of families, especially in the low income or socioeconomic communities. Parents work multiple jobs and it's very difficult for them to keep up with all the changes that are happening. So having that level of support at home to generally help them gain that access that they need to be successful in this transition.
Melissa, what about you? You're down in Monroe County. What's the biggest concern for you?
I'm going to echo what's already been said. I will say, our district this year is going one-to-one on devices. So students will all have access to devices. We have similar deals with providers to try and provide internet access for those that that can't afford it otherwise. But it's difficult to be completely universal.
Yeah.
Similarly with help at home, I know that we're doing a lot of things a little differently this go around in order to try to address some of those issues.
Yeah.
But certainly that's something that's on the back of my mind.
Brandon, what about you? Is it the same?
I certainly agree the access is an issue, but if I can just kind of say about my students, I'm more concerned, my students being that very high achieving kids, the stress, their mental health through this process. I can only imagine having to do college applications and rigorous AP coursework in a distance format. Mm-hmm. And I don't think it's anything, well, I'm sure it's probably that none of us have done before. None of them have done before. And it's going to be an interesting ride.
Medibel, what did we learn from the last couple of months of the spring? Because, I mean, look, the pandemic hit, all of a sudden, everything stops. Mm-hmm. Everything stops. Everybody go home because we can't do business. We can't do anything. And now all of a sudden, you've got to finish out those last couple of months online. What was that like? What did you learn from that?
I've kind of already knew this, but it's kind of solidified my theory that teachers are innovative. You give us a problem, we will figure out how to make it work. And the students just, for the most part, luckily most teachers have developed relationships with their students by the time we ended the school year last year. So they just trusted us on this journey for the most part.
And you already had experience with online teaching.
Similarly, I mean, I just use a lot of online formats with my students to supplement the material. I do teach high achieving students as well, AP students. And so a lot of the information that we utilize for the content has to be current. So a lot of times it has to be through online or virtual avenues. And so my students, fortunately, due to flexibility of being not scared of attempting to use virtual formats, we have actually had some of that similarity. So using like Google Classroom and Google Meets, even doing like virtual calls with kids in other states and other countries is something that we weren't foreign to.
Again, but you had that advantage. I mean, because you have some of that experience, and yet teachers, you're right, teachers are innovative. They're flexible when they need to be. But Robert, you also have experience teaching online, but I'm wondering if you heard from some of your peers who don't have as much confidence as you, and maybe they don't like that.
In the spring, in March, when March 13th hit, that was our last day, and there was a lot of fear. Obviously, there was a lot of uncertainty in the whole world, not just in the teaching community. But teachers were afraid to be on camera like this. They weren't comfortable, or they were afraid of being recorded, or they were afraid that the parents are over the shoulder, which in a lot of cases they were. But that's sort of, I mean, you know, what can you do? So some teachers didn't go live. There wasn't a requirement for how much live you had to do. And it's sort of everybody found what worked for them. And in some mm-hmm. cases, that didn't work as well for the parents or students of that group. Some people had their small children around, and it was just them and their small child, and they had no childcare for their kid. And they were worried about having their kid in the shot. But,
yeah,
I didn't find any of my parents.
It's a brave new world. It's a brave new world. We all have to learn how to do this online. Again, talking with a panel of teachers today about the start of school, which is coming up this month. And again, every school district has changed their date, so everybody's got a different start date. But the thing they all have in common, everybody is starting remote learning. The number again is 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. What was your experience like as a parent when your kids had to stay home and learn? How did it work? What are your questions? Because we're going to have to start that way again. What are your questions about how do we do this and make it effective and make sure your kids don't fall behind? Again, 800-743-9576. Brandon, did you get support from the district, when everybody had to switch to now teaching online? Did the school district, were they there? Did they help you? Did they give you everything you needed? No problem?
Well, I mean, I think we definitely had a lot of things in place, like our Canvas LMS and also we're a Microsoft 365 district, so all the students have access to those tools. But I certainly personally felt like we were just kind of thrown into it. We did have a couple weeks to figure things out, but I know a lot of teachers had never used Teams or Zoom. I fortunately, through some past relationships, I was familiar with Zoom, and that was a mechanism that I used. But a lot of teachers really didn't have much of a website and weren't acclimated to using Canvas. And with all the other stressors going on, I know one of my fellow teachers, she has two younger children, and she's a single mom. And so I can only imagine what that was like for her. You know, certainly we as fellow teachers, and the other teacher said quite accurately, we just come up with solutions. We're not looking forward to doing it, but that's what we do. It's what we owe the students. And so that's how I feel I did.
Melissa, you know, what's changed? What's going to change for this upcoming term? Is it going to be the same way, the same systems? Or have you made adjustments to adapt so that you don't leave anybody behind, so the kids feel like they're still learning?
I think there's been lots of adjustments made, particularly a schedule of live lessons for kids, you know, K through 12 throughout the day. That's very set so that kids can interact with their teachers live, really as much as possible. We also, like I said, we're going to be one-to-one on devices for all of the students in the district right now. So that means they can, you know, provided that they have internet access, you know, they can access those lessons live. And I think that it's going to make a really big difference. We also have some other improvements to our technology. We were using Google Meet, but now we're going to be able to have breakout rooms and do some other things that I think are going to really help us get engaged with students and connect to them.
I'm excited for the breakout rooms, by the way.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Well,
did any of you hear from any of your students? Did they say to you, I can't learn this way. I'm falling behind. I don't like this at all. I mean, we'd like to assume that the younger generation connects with technology better than older generations, but look, some people need to be in a classroom mm-hmm. with other kids. They need to see your face. They need to talk to you. Did anybody hear, Brandon, did you hear from any of your students that they struggled?
Yeah, I definitely heard from students, you know, being that a lot of them, it was their pivotal year in high school for college admissions. And they had all these AP exams that had changed formats. And I found that students really did struggle and communicated to me that, number one, they were struggling with the situation of the pandemic, they were struggling with the social isolation. And then on top of that, you know, normally they kind of had the benefit of when they go to school, they get to see all their friends. Now they didn't get that benefit. Mm-hmm. And it was even harder for them to sit in front of a computer for 6-8 hours a day and stare at a screen and not have, you know, not just be completely, you know, wiped out at the end of it. So I think students, at least, you know, the students who are very vocal, they really had a hard time with it. So I ran live classes last year, last quarter, and I think that's a great thing for going forward.
Yeah.
And I think it's something students need.
And Maddie Bell, I mean, what's going to be different? How are you going to make sure those kids don't get burnt out sitting in front of a screen for 6 hours?
Well, I'm making sure we divide that time into synchronous hour and then asynchronous hour, where they have the opportunity mm-hmm. to do what we would normally do in the classroom, break out into groups, kind of like socialize, mm-hmm. Come up with ideas and be creative on their own, and where the teacher can just pop into those small group rooms of maybe 3 or 4 students and hear what's going on, course correct if, you know, they're deviating for what they need to do. I think that's going to be extremely helpful. And I'm really excited to be utilizing that particular tool of like Zoom is having those breakout rooms for the students. But ultimately, yeah, there were several students who, I mean, learning online is a preference. I didn't like it in college. If I had the choice to do college online or college mm-hmm. in the class, I chose to be with a professor.
Yeah.
So I completely related with them.
and you know, before we go to the phones here, Robert, the interesting point here, you teach elementary school.
Yes.
You know, so kids at that age, a little bit different in their socializing. And I'm wondering, you know, did you hear from any parents about how their kids were reacting to having to be at home you know, how are you going to try to adjust that to help them?
Well, I definitely heard from my wife, who's in the other room. Our little guy's 7. He's going to be in second grade. For elementary kids, I'm concerned about the you have to be on the camera, on the machine for X amount of time all throughout the day. I don't know how sustainable of a model that is for small kids. I know for my own son, it's not particularly. Yes, they need the FaceTime with the teacher. They need to feel like they're still in a class. You know, they still have this adult that cares for them. In elementary, obviously, we're very much the mother hen, and we want to mother them as much as possible, or father in my case.
Yes.
I wonder how much stamina my son has to sit in front of a computer and attend a 9 o'clock language arts and a 10 o'clock science. And, you know, is that going to continue into the afternoon?
Exactly.
No, and then with both parents working, how many other children are going to have that experience where the parent is basically going to have to shoo them towards the computer and they're going to just naturally drift off because, while the parents are working on their computers?
Right, because with little kids, smaller kids, I should say younger kids, you know, you have to have that parent there. Mm-hmm. You have to have the adult there. Yes. To make sure whether you expect the teenager, you know, it's like you understand your role and what you need to do. We hope that they're doing that. We've been getting comments on Facebook, by the way, a lot of comments. You could post your comment or question there. We heard from Betsy Kennedy, who says, "We are counting on students and families to be diligent, and while most probably are, some are not. If a baseball team can't keep their players safe with all the safeguards and money and doctors and tests and masks, why do we think our schools could?" She's obviously referring to Major League Baseball and the fact that the Marlins team, almost half the team, got COVID. Mm-hmm. I want to go to the phones. I want to go to Marcia, who is in Homestead. Marcia, welcome to the program.
Hi, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're a mom. You're a working mom.
Yeah, and I'm an essential healthcare worker. I have to be at work.
So how are you going to do it?
I don't know. I'm still trying to figure that out. I really was hoping that at least with the proper precautions that school would be open, because I don't have anyone to leave my daughter to. At least my son, I could. He's in daycare. He's fine. He's young. But she's 7. She'll be going into second grade, too. They need guidance. The teachers are there, but, you know, as a parent, they maybe need a little extra help, and obviously I have to be at home, so I don't know how I will do it.
This is a huge challenge. Is mm-hmm. obviously that, you know, some parents have the freedom that they can do that, they can be at home,
yeah,
and a lot can't, and this is going to be a challenge. You said you have your son is in daycare though, right?
Yeah, he'll be 2 in October, so he's still. They will be open. They're opening again on the 10th. They had a case, so they had to close down for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Marcia, just out of curiosity, do you have any other friends, other parents in the same situation? Have you guys talked about possibly trying to find a way to help each other out?
The only real friend I would trust my kids with, she's 2 hours away.
I got
but
you.
But she's keeping her kids home.
I see.
Yeah.
Marcia, I mean, thank you for sharing. And, you know, again, I know that because of the work that you do, which is extremely important, for that, I'm grateful. But I'm wishing you the best. And let us know if you do find a solution. And maybe hopefully somebody figures out what that solution is for parents like you.
Yeah, I'm really hoping. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Marcia. I appreciate it. Before we go to break, one of the things that I didn't thought about this, but... our intern brought this up. I thought this was really fascinating concept. Students, especially at the beginning of the year, they come in and look, they're getting used to a new grade. They have some of their friends that they, you know, are coming in with them, but they're also meeting new people. And of course, they have to meet the teacher. And it's about making that personal connection with mm-hmm. the teacher. You're not going to have that. You're not going to have that, at least not for a little while. You know, so I'm wondering, Melissa, you know, how do you overcome that?
Well, I've been thinking about that a lot, and I'm hoping that I follow through here. I'm going to try and do a couple of little things, certainly sort of meet the teacher online events before we start. I know that the district will be doing that as well. I have a goal of writing a welcome letter to all of my students this year. sending them some little goodies in the mail. I hope I follow through with my goal. It's a lot of kids. But I'm thinking about doing that. I know that certainly part of the emphasis at the start of school virtually will be to try to build those relationships. That was the one advantage we did have in the spring, was that, you know, we already knew our students well, and they knew us. And so I think a lot of the start of this year is going to be about how do we have small group conversations with our kids? How do we start to get to know them virtually?
It is a different world, no doubt. We are all adapting to it. Again, we are talking with a panel of teachers from South Florida. Again, school starting this month. Different dates for different districts, but all of them are starting with distance learning. We're going to continue the conversation in just a moment. Again, the number 800-743-9576. If you're a parent or teacher, what's your question, your concern about starting school remotely? Maybe there's something we could help you with. Again, 800-743-9576. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, it is that time of year again. It's back to school, only this time, no bus routes, no carpool. We are all staying put. All South Florida public schools are starting the school year with distance learning. Let's continue our panel discussion with our teachers. Again, our guests are Maribel Pisado from Palmetto Senior High, Robert DeGennaro, Hagen Road Elementary, Brandon Boswell at Cypress Bay High School, and Melissa Welch at Coral Shores High. As a reminder, we're on Facebook. Go to WLRN Sundial. We're streaming live. You could watch the show there. Post your questions there, or you could call in 800-743-9576. Again, that's 800-743-WLRN. What was it like for you at the end of last term for your child learning from home? Did it work? Are you afraid your child might be falling behind? And again, since we're starting that way, you know, how could you be a little more effective, in helping your kid? 800-743-9576. Talking about, this new school year and that we have to learn from a distance again, I'm wondering about your curriculums and what's changed. Brandon, did you have to change your curriculum a lot? I mean, because what I really want to get to is, are the students going to get everything that they would get normally, or did you have to scale it back?
Well, I mean, that's a great question. I think normal is pretty much out the door at this point. And I really kind of feel like I'm a first year teacher, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. I accept that challenge. And I've done a lot of work, as I'm sure everybody else here has, this summer to learn new techniques, learn things that have worked, and to practice them and to get ready for next year. So no, I would say my course in a few weeks is going to be significantly different than it was in the past. And I think it'll hopefully be for the better. I'm very optimistic about where we're going. But on the other hand, I think the students are going to find it a very different experience. And so I'm certainly planning to do a lot of that community building and a lot of that scaffolding early in the year, and planning on going a little bit slower, understanding that we're in this unique time.
But the other thing too, Brandon, is, I mean, and we heard it from the superintendents, at the start of back in May and June, I should say. And they were all concerned about that, the students falling behind. And, there was always that one group of students that we were concerned about. Now it's all of them. But, especially when you've got kids who are preparing for AP tests, preparing for the SATs to go to college, how far behind do you think they're going to fall?
I don't think they're going to fall behind at all. I definitely think that it'll be more challenging for them, and that they're going to learn through necessity a bunch of skills that they would normally have learned in college. So if anything, it's going to accelerate that independent learning and that being able to, for lack of a better term, help figure out what you need instead of having us, the teachers, kind of, spoon feeding it to you in that form that works really well for you. So I don't necessarily see it as a bad thing, but I definitely see it as a challenge. And I hope that our students will rise to that challenge. And I know that my students will.
Maribel, give me a little idea of how you change your class. What you're doing differently to, again, engage with students. You're trying some different things.
I am. But before I get there, I just wanted to say I completely agree with the gentleman before, because I think the life skill component that is going to be, students and families are going to need to shift in order to support their child to be successful is going to be tremendous. I know for me, it's always been a struggle teaching time management, teaching, you know, taking notes, teaching organization. And this is something they're going to be forced and need to do in order to be successful. For me, in order to maintain a little bit of fun and to show a little bit of my personality, I've kind of drank the Bitmoji virtual classroom Kool-Aid.
Okay, wait, hold on. You have to explain what that is. Some of us don't know.
So virtual classroom is this setup that you can create on Google Slides, and you add Bitmojis. The Bitmojis are like these, they can be animated, but they are like these cartoon characters of yourself. And so you create this classroom that is a kind of a character of you, who you are as a teacher and what the students should be expecting of you. And you use these Bitmojis to kind of meet them where they are in terms of pop culture and to help bring them into the learning that you need to see happen. So I'm really excited to do that. I've seen some real creative designs from other teachers. Mine is at a very novice level, but I've gotten feedback from some of my friends who have kids. I'm like, here, have your kids play on this for me and see and give me feedback. And they thought it was super cool. They thought it was like a video game. And that was my goal, is I want them to feel that it's fun and it's something that they can relate to for their generation.
Because I don't want to make an assumption, but at the same time, earlier, you know, we heard how a student sitting in front of the computer for 6 hours can be very draining. Yet, granted, mm-hmm. you know, kids will sit in front of a computer for six hours playing video games.
Or Netflix binging.
So it sounds to me like you have to engage them. Robert, I mean, you know, again, because you have the experience with online learning, what is it? What do we have to do to make sure that kid doesn't burn out and enjoys the process and they're still learning at the same level as if they were in your classroom?
Well, I mean, to echo a comment earlier, I think setting ourselves up for that it's going to be the same as the classroom like it was mm-hmm. this time last year is probably not a realistic expectation. I think we all as parents, as community members, have to manage our expectations there. Mm-hmm. You know, even there's a difference between going to the Y and taking the exercise class or watching it on Netflix and exercising it in your living room. You know, there's a small difference, probably not that much for exercise, but you know, you have to make it personal for the kids. You have to put on yourself. I don't have a Bitmoji. I have Robmoji. Just video myself giving the instructions in video so that there's that personalized thing. And, you know, and kids are kind of used to that. Yes, they will watch Netflix for 6 hours, but they won't watch us for 6 minutes. In most cases, the rule of thumb for children is that their attention span is approximately the same number of minutes as their age, mm-hmm. right?
And so one interesting thing for you, Robert, is you and your wife teach at the same school and your parents. And so I'm wondering, like, you know, the way you're dealing with your kids, how are you using that now, understanding, oh, this is probably how my students are acting too. How are you using that? What are you doing? And this is to help parents right now who are listening and they're like, I don't know how to get my kids to stay focused.
Yes.
That's a challenge that everybody has, right? So our child, like everybody else, he's not going to sit there. As a teacher, I'm doing things that are maybe off screen for some of the time and on screen, or that's like, it's a hybrid where I'm on here with the camera, but they're sort of working at their seats as they might have been doing anyhow. You know, one of the things I hear a lot on the media is, I want it to be like it was. And the thing is, even if we all went back right now, it's never going to be like it was. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have cafeteria. We're not going to have playground. We're not going to have art class, you know, where they're going to change around. There are so many things that wouldn't even be the same. And I just think, you know, the perfect can't be the enemy of the good here.
Yeah. Brandon, you wanted to jump in.
Yeah. I wanted to say, since I teach science, labs, I don't, you know, even if we went back right now, how do we do labs with social distancing with everybody 6 feet apart? You would have to essentially have me being the waiter you know, dropping things off to everybody and then, you know, taking orders and going from there. Yeah. And even then, I don't know how great it would work. And you're talking labs that typically, you know, would take 50 minutes beforehand would take an inordinate amount of time now. So I agree with the gentleman before me is in that everything's different. It's all different.
You just got me thinking about biology class when we had to dissect animals. Does that even happen anymore? That's so fascinating. I didn't even think about that. 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. Again, you know, if you're a teacher, we'd love to hear your thoughts as well, your concerns about this upcoming school year, or if you're a parent, you know, what are the challenges of helping your kid not fall behind as we're all going to have to, you know, start school, you know, at home. Let me go to the phones. I'm going to go to Socrates in Miami. Welcome to the program. You got a question for us.
Hey, how you doing, man?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. So the question essentially is, my child was originally in a online program, in a Miami-Dade online program, and last year they went back to traditional school, but at a magnet school. So the magnet school has this requirement for eighth graders that they have to essentially take a algebraic test and pass it with a certain grade. This is not the norm at a regular school, nor at the online program school. So my concern is my daughter's coming back to this this school, and this test hasn't been talked about yet. You know, so is that something that the state is going to be taking into consideration with these students, these EOC tests, or what?
All right, Socrates, thank you so much for the call. I appreciate that. Testing in general, but I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know, did anybody have an answer to his particular question? If not, what about just the idea of testing? How has testing changed for this upcoming school year? Has anybody been told on that?
I think it's still a work in progress for Dade County.
Oh, it is? Okay. Robert?
We've been told that the elementary school grades will ride on the fifth graders since they're the only ones that will have growth data from their third grade exam. Those kids didn't have it at the end of fourth, and now they're entering fifth. So that's how they're going to grade us for, you know, elementary school, as if that were such a great idea to begin with. But we only have an hour, so.
That is true. Melissa, go ahead.
Yes, as far as we know, you know, the state still wants to have their required testing. And like, you know, at the high school level, that does mean certain things that, you know, students will have to pass. And I think it is a sort of a work in progress that we are figuring out. And, you know, I've been thinking myself as well, that's, you know, big high stakes testing at the end. Students still took AP tests in the spring, and it was very different.
Yes.
But I'm still going to have to give, you know, real authentic tests now as we start remote learning. And I'm already thinking about how I'm going to change that to make sure that my results are authentic and really show how kids are doing and understanding the material.
You know, and I've got questions about tests here in just a moment. I want to ask you, just again, to put out the number 800-743-9576 to post your question. We did hear from some of our listeners on Facebook. We heard from a Luz Ortega Mendoza saying, I have an 11th grader with an ADHD diagnosis. I would ask teachers to please remember not all kids learn at the same pace and need to be reminded to start and finish their work. Please help them out. Okay, students that have certain challenges, like this, like Luce's son, how is that going to be, you know, dealt with? How do you deal with that? Mary Bell, let me ask you that.
Well, actually, the last quarter, I had several students in my AP classes with individual education plans, IEPs, that needed special accommodations. So communicating with the parent, basically having the parents help the child advocate for themselves, because it's a lot harder to see if they're falling behind virtually than if it were in the classroom. The classroom was a lot easier for me to notice it and kind of catch it before the parent would need to get involved. In this case, the parent does need to be the voice of their child. They do need to advocate for their child, and they're going to need to support their child at home. So for example, if we had a student, usually ADHD students need to be put in an area that has the least amount of distractions in a classroom environment. You need to create that least distracted environment at home for them. Also with ADHD students, I know another tactic is chunking the learning. So making sure that they take a quick brain break in between, if it's a secondary student, in between periods, if it's a smaller student, you know, in between subject lessons, so that they can make sure that they are getting the most out of their learning environment, and just reiterating that they do have more time to complete certain assignments if it's essentially stated on their individual education plan.
Yeah. Before we go to break, I wanted to ask about, because you talked about testing, and, you know, just wondering how you teach online. Look, let me just get to this. Basically, how do you know your students aren't cheating? All right. I'm thinking to myself, would it be just that easy to do, Melissa? How do you protect against cheating?
That is what I have been spending a lot of time thinking about, because it's very difficult. I mentioned that even though state testing was suspended in the spring, the College Board did still have AP testing.
Yes, they did.
And what they basically did was have really limited amounts of time for students to have written answers to tests, and had multiple versions of what they were asking. I'm trying to think about how I can maybe replicate that as I test my students, but it's definitely gonna pose a challenge.
Mm-hmm. It hit me when somebody said the word tests, and I said, wait a second, you're not in my house, how do you know what I'm doing? I just wondering. You know what, we're gonna take a break, one more break, but I'm gonna switch things up. When we come back, I want to talk about, yes, we're all starting distance learning, eventually kids are gonna go back to the classroom. And do we have a plan on how that's going to work? We'd love to hear from you. Again, the number 800-743-9576. We'll continue this conversation with our teacher panel coming up next. Welcome back to Sundial on WLRN. Well, teachers have a lot of concerns about the prospect of returning to the classroom. A national poll from EdWeek found more than half of teachers don't think there should be any in-person instruction at the start of the school year. One in five said they won't return to work if their school district reopens the building. Now, that's not the case in South Florida. All the districts are going to be starting with distance learning. What needs to change for teachers, parents, and students to feel safe again in the classroom? Again, my panel of teachers include Maribel Pizarro from Palmetto Senior High, Robert DeGennaro from Hagen Road Elementary, Brandon Boswell from Cypress Bay High School, and Melissa Welch from Coral Shores High. Parents and teachers, again, we want to hear from you. What do you need to see for you to feel safe to send your kid back to the classroom? 800-743-9576. That's 800-743-WLRN. We did hear from one of our listeners on Facebook. Erin Blackerby says, in order for her to feel safe, she wants the coronavirus positivity rate below 5% for 2 weeks, funding for PPE and sources to find it easily, also social distancing, air purifiers, and airflow upgrades. That's an interesting point, because I know there are a lot of schools that are older, and those air condition units and all those filters haven't been cleaned out in a while. They're not very good. But yeah, I mean, coming back to class, and Melissa, let me start with you, because you were part of the task force in Monroe County that's trying to figure out a way to get kids back. Now, for the first 4 weeks, you're going to be distance learning, and then you're going to bring it up. There'll be a discussion as to when everybody should go back to the classroom. What have those conversations been like? How do people feel? Is it like the stat I just read? Everybody feel nervous about going back?
Well, there's been a couple of polls, and you know, I think it's changed as virus rates have increased over the course of the summer. The task force in Monroe County was over 50 people, including all kinds of stakeholders from across the county. And they worked really hard at creating a guidebook to come back to school. And then individual schools have been working for the last couple of weeks to create really specific protocols at each building in order to figure out how to come back. But, you know, I think concerns vary widely. Teachers are certainly concerned about coming back at some point to live face-to-face instruction. But I think it's going to depend a lot on where we are in terms of community spread of the virus at that time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to go to the phones. I want to go to Alan in Key Biscayne. Alan, thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, and thank you for taking my call.
What's your concern? Talk to us.
My concern is about the money and the budget that has not been allocated. Just doing a quick check of math, of math needed. You know, as you know, even if you require students to provide their own masks, a certain percentage of students are not going to come into the schoolhouse with a mask on and going to ask to be provided a mask that day. So if you do the math on that at $1 a mask, you're talking about, based on the 600,000 students in Dade schools, you're talking about an expense of $600,000 a month just to provide masks if one student needs a mask once per month.
Right.
So I would like to hear your panel's discussion on those kind of expenses.
Very interesting point. Alan, Brandon, you want to chime in?
Yeah, PPE funding is largely provided through FEMA, through Federal Emergency Management Assistance. So that money has already been allocated to my understanding. I'm certainly not a district person, but financially, I don't think districts are that concerned about the money, where it's going to come from. The question is, can we get those materials? And can we get them to everybody who needs them in a timely, efficient manner?
And what have you heard from the district about how those materials are going to be distributed?
We have a pretty good sized stockpile, and schools have been requesting them throughout the summer. And so each school should have a pretty good supply from what I understand. I don't know if they're N95s or KN95 masks or what they are. But it was, you know, communicated to me that that's not a big concern.
Maddie Bell, what have you heard from the district about? I want to get a picture of when everybody's coming back to school, and students are coming in. Are we going to be guiding them in through only certain entrances? Are we going to be doing temperature checks? Are we going to make sure every kid's got a mask? If not, somebody can hand them one. I mean, I know we're going to talk about what the classroom is going to change like, but what about those discussions? What have those discussions been like?
So I think one of the major reasons why we're starting Dade County virtually is because every schoolhouse is different. We have some newer buildings, and then we have some older buildings that are still actually undergoing renovation. So ultimately, as it stands right now, I think there's going to be a lot of autonomy in terms of the individual school administration and schoolhouse to decide what those protocols will look like to meet the needs of their school community and the school infrastructure itself. But again, that's a conversation that's still ongoing. And that's one of the main reasons why we are starting virtually, is because we don't necessarily have a one-size-fit-all answer to that. And I honestly don't think we can have a one-size-fit-all answer for that.
Alan, thank you so much for the call and for that question. Very interesting point. Robert, I know that, you know, in some cases, teachers have to buy a lot of their own supplies for students. Now you've got extra supplies because it's not just the masks, but it's also the sanitizers and the cleaning supplies. Or did your school say they're going to supply you with that?
My individual school, I think, will do everything humanly possible for us. And I think the district wants to. The difference is, you know, we're used to starting every year basically behind the eight ball as far as materials. Well, we don't have enough workbooks. Yeah, you guys figure it out. Make copies, you know, right? So
wow.
Every year, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be, our contract isn't settled yet. We'll settle it in like December. You'll get retro pay, you know? Okay. So this is the one thing that we can't afford to just figure out while we get there, right? And that's exactly where a lot of the anxiety from teachers and staff is we every single year are told, just start. We'll figure it out, you know? And we don't want to be told that now in this kind of a situation. So yes, I think a lot of teachers, I've seen online posts from teachers that are buying plexiglass to create a cubicle situation so that they can do reading groups. A friend of mine insists that she's going to wear the full face shield, you know, like Marty McFly in Back to the Future. I think she's going to wear the whole radiation suit.
Wow.
But yeah, you know, I'm comfortable with just the cloth mask for my own purposes, you know, short answer. I don't know.
Let me bring in one more call here. Terry in Miami Gardens. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you. Hello, everybody.
Terry, what's your concern, Terry?
Okay, just wanted to say hello first.
Okay.
I worked in the school system. I came in late in life, and I'm a welder. I've been into welders in health for many years before that. And when I got there, I noticed the kids weren't washing their hands. They were not cleaning off their desks. And they had a shortage of staff or funding, and the floors weren't even being cleaned. So after about 2 months, I brought in my own floor cleanser, and I mopped the floors myself. And so that was a big problem, just keeping them clean. And this hadn't even come about yet.
Yeah.
And this other thing I want to tell you, last thing, I was grieved about school shootings. I didn't know how we were going to solve these school massacre problems. And I believe this is the solution.
Well,
and
I never
want to go back into a classroom again.
Terry, that's an interesting point, and I have to stop there only because of time. I mean, that's another conversation. But the cleaning part, and I'm going to come back to this, you know, what she had pointed out, and again, Robert, what you were saying. But here's the thing. What's the plan for cleaning the school? You know, Melissa, I mean, like what happened with, you know, one of the schools in Monroe County over the summer when somebody got sick and had to disinfect that whole area. What's the plan? Is there enough cleaning staff to go around and clean everything all the time? Because you're talking about every day, scrub everything, or is it on you?
I don't know all the details of the plan exactly. I know they are going to provide us with hand sanitizer and materials, other cleaning supplies, but I know the plan is that, you know, the building will be cleaned every night. In terms of deep cleaning, those are sort of, I think, a specific details depending on individual situations. I imagine that they'll happen, obviously, in the event of a positive case.
And it was interesting because Robert's talking about, you know, teacher building her own plexiglass, container. But you know what, Maddie Bell, let me ask you first. And then Brandon, I want to ask you, what about that? Are you going to, we have to social distance. That means no more 30 kids per classroom. So what's the deal? How are you spreading your kids? How are you going to spread your kids out? And are you going to build a bubble around yourself?
Well, spreading the kids out, I guess it we have to look at the numbers when the numbers arrive. again, like I think it was Robert that was mentioning earlier, there's just so much ambiguity into what this is going to look like. And in the past, teachers have kind of just rolled with it, like, this is what we need to do. This is what needs to happen. We'll make it happen. And I think a lot of the, you know, the anxiety is coming from the fact that we can't do this time around. We can't say once we're in schools, oh, this is a problem we encountered, how do we solve it? We need to have every possible measure, if possible, planned out and have a contingency plan for that already thought through.
Yeah, you got to have a plan.
Exactly.
Brandon, quickly, you know, not just that, protecting yourself, but then you're going to have to be the police. You're going to have to make sure kids are social distance and wearing their masks. I mean, look, you're already the authoritative figures in the school, but are you ready to do that?
Yeah, I completely agree. I don't even know if there are the conditions set forth or the protocols set forth as to what we can, you know, for lack of a better term, police. Mm-hmm. I know that in my school district in Broward, students do not have to wear masks inside the classroom. That's something that's already been decided. So there are far more unknowns than knowns, which we're more than happy to work with. But at this late stage in the game, it's disconcerting, to say the least. And it makes everybody's stress substantially higher since those decisions haven't been made.
So many things are changing. And as we heard earlier, lunch is going to be different. Recess, physical education, sports, all these things are going to be so different, at least for now. I want to thank my panel, a great panel of teachers again, Maribel Pesado from Palmetto Senior High, Robert DeGennaro from Hagen Road Elementary, Brandon Boswell from Cypress Bay High School, and Melissa Welch from Coral Shores High. Thank you so much for your time today. And, you know, to all of you, have a great year. It's going to be challenging, but have a great year. What you do is so important, and hopefully, you know, our kids are going to be all right. Everybody's going to be okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And again, we want to hear from you. You know, if you're a parent or teacher, share with us, you know, what this school year is going to be like for you. Find us on Facebook. Post your comments or questions there. That's our program for today, this Tuesday, August 4th. Coming up tomorrow on the show, we're going to introduce you to the progressive candidates vying to be your next congressional candidates. They've called themselves Florida Fab Four, and they're challenging longstanding representatives from Palm Beach County down to Monroe. We're going to discuss the progressive agenda for the 2020 election. Plus, how is retail surviving this pandemic? Beth Azor owns six shops around South Florida, and she's going to share with us, and we're going to talk a little bit about how retail is taking a big hit and what they have to do to try to stay alive. And don't forget, by the way, we have a book club. Our August read is Black Widow by Leslie Grace Streeter. You can find us on Facebook, our book Sundial Book Club, and ask to join. It's free. We'd love to have you. And always post on there what you're reading. We'd love to hear more from you. That's our program for today. Again, thank you so much to all the teachers in South Florida for what you do. I'm Luis Hernandez. Have a wonderful day. We'll talk to you again live tomorrow.